doing a thing much worse, much more extreme, and also actually doing it. Like, you know, Trump said in court that, like, the value of his properties fluctuates, you know, day to day with the weather. You know, it fluctuates with his own mood, in his own mind. He said that in court under oath. I mean, it's preposterous. It is completely preposterous for him to, you know, do it. And, like, it's just a pretext.
But I haven't seen any reference to that in any of this reporting of Cook. From even like the BBC reporting of it doesn't point out what you just pointed out.
Yeah, I think people see that as editorializing. But yeah, it's a basic fact. And of course, you know, the obvious needs to be stated. She's been targeted, not just being targeted for the Federal Reserve in general, she's been targeted in this specific way for being a black woman. Like, you know, this country, the main and false narrative about the great financial crisis is essentially that, like, immigrants and black people took out loans that they couldn't afford, and they defrauded the banks rather than the banks defrauded them. You know, there's a long history of pointing to the supposed financial malfeasance and fraud of black women in this country. It's, you know, the central basis of the welfare queen myth. Like, you know, we'd be shirking our duty not to just say the obvious, which is she's been targeted not just in general, but in this way, with this allegation, in this sort of focus of maximal humiliation because she is a black woman and because of the racial history behind this specific allegation in this country.
Tune in next week for the second half of our Sea Change Radio conversation with journalist Nathan Tankus.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Samford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Head Funk, Ray Charles, and Spinal Tap. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.
KBOO Portland.
Tune into KBOO every third Saturday at 10 p.m. for Query. Dive into the spectrum of queer music as we explore artists across time and genre.
She's on my mind every hour of every day.
That's Query. Every third Saturday at 10 p.m.
The things we could do, oh, it takes my breath away.
Here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And I lose control, think I follow
home. Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Andy, moan, now, whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver stream. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is artist Nancy Helmsworth. Nancy is part of a show called Riparian Reflections with Julie Johnson and Lisa Conway. The show is on now at Gallery 114 in the Pearl through September 27th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Nancy.
Well, thank you for having me.
Nancy, you love Forest Park. You go hiking there several times a week, but you've done painting shows about Forest Park before. This show in particular is Riparian Reflections, is, you know, about streams. And this one in particular is about what we call Balch Creek. People know it because it runs through the Bird Alliance of Oregon and it comes out at Lower McClay Park, which is where most people enter Forest Park. Tell us what grabbed your attention, made you focus and produce so many paintings of the creek for this particular show.
Well, I'm in the park multiple times a week, and I tried to really watch how I behaved in the park and found myself really connected to or focused upon the creek. It goes from a really wild, fresh-looking area with overgrown plants and moss and feels very unurban, and it takes so many twists and turns. It's got a different view or different look just foot by foot as it goes about, I think it's about a mile and a third from the border of Lower McClay all the way down to where it's culverted under the bridge of the Thurman Street Bridge, to go culverted under the industrial area where it drains into the Willamette at outfall. The tube is outfall 17, I'm pretty sure, behind the fire station on Front Street. So we take this wild thing and we control it.
Are you able to hike along the banks of it all the way?
I've tried, yes. I've hiked all the way along Lower McClay Trail and obviously up in the Bird Alliance of Oregon. And then I've also, it feeds in the little streamlets that come together at the Bird Alliance, but they come from two different watersheds or two different drainage areas. I have parked and gotten out of my car and tried to track the stream along Thompson, along Cornell. I will tell you, people drive really fast on both those roads, and there's barely a shoulder, so it's not real good walking outside of the park.
You've gone in and made paintings of bits of the creek that anyone could see.
Correct. That's the cool thing about this. If you want to go see these spots, they're all on public land. Yeah.
So as you come in, gallery 114, you know, it's in the basement. First wall on the right, there's an assemblage of paintings. These are all acrylic on wood panel, and they're mostly square, and square is a theme of your sort of aesthetic on this show. The largest painting is the stream bed, lots of exposed pebbles, rock, some green highlights on the rocks, and then some very mossy boughs and sort of ferns, you know, the classic Forest Park understory, and then bright blue and white water, which presumably is fairly still and it's reflecting the sky.
Well, this particular spot is from the Bird Alliance, and you go to the south side of Cornell Road on their property, go down the steep little trail, cross a little bridge, and then you can look down the creek. I have done a painting that isn't in this show that's of the same creek in the wintertime that's full of water. It's pretty interesting to me to come and see what's exposed and what's not exposed. Also, anybody who's in Forest Park any amount of time, you see how all these different trees are constantly falling down and changing the view and the landscape and sometimes the trajectory of the stream.
Are you painting plein air or are you using photos and going back to your studio?
Yes, I'm using photos and going back to my studio. But oftentimes, including with some of these paintings that are really big and complicated, I will start the painting and then I will have to go return to the site and go, I don't really understand what happens over in this one area, and they have to take some more reference photos. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I do there, and that's the beauty of this area. It's super interesting to me because it has a really interesting history to it as well, but also that it's accessible to me. I can go up there at a moment's notice and go check it out.
What kind of camera are you using?
Oh, I'm using my phone. I had started out using an SLR, and I decided I didn't need to do that. Mm-hmm. What I wanted could easily get from my phone. A lot of my work is about the intersection of humans and trying to understand the landscape. So a lot of these are playing around with different ways to represent the water. So I've extrapolated, pixelated the water in some of the paintings, and I have used Photoshop to force myself to see the area in different ways. I have a kind of a fractured version of the mm-hmm. water. And just the thing is that we all, individuals experience nature differently.
So the large painting, which I described, it has a gloss to it, the acrylics, but you've divided it into a grid of 4x4 squares, and some of those are subdivided into 4x4s. So you change the tone in some of the squares. Some of them are just kind of grayed out, where you'd expect a rock with detail. It's just sort of olive gray. Some of the background, again, is kind of olivey green. The divisions are done by some kind of white chalk or crayon, so they're pretty obvious. What was the initial impact you were trying to get across with the grid?
Well, there's two ways to think about the grid. Grid has a deeply historic precedent in painting, meaning how to take a small image and how to enlarge it to a bigger image and keep things in proportion. So that was developed in the Renaissance time. And it's a technique that I love. But also I have a real affinity to squares. But the other thing that I found super interesting and affirming was that this part of Portland was gridded out in the initial surveys of the land. They were exploring this part of the country in the early 1840s, and they just needed to map it. And they mapped it to, you can't talk about anything unless you give it a designation in a word to refer to. So part of the mapping, all the mapping is done with grids from Oregon. And the 00 point is right up the hill from this at the Willamette Stone, which is pretty much down the hill from Skyline Boulevard and Barnes Road. So I wanted that kind of past and present, natural and unnatural imposition, human imposition on nature. I wanted that to show through.
There is a little realistic painting of a bird.
A flicker. I just said, you know, there's 112 sighted birds in Forest Park. And I decided, well, of 112, I wasn't going to show all the different birds. But I decided, I had seen a flicker one day. And I decided flicker would be my representative bird. So I have a flicker in multiple spots of this show.
It's painted on a small panel, and it's hanging by string on the top left corner of the painting. Below is a little shelf with like real pebbles and then kind of handmade hemisphere kind of pebbles. And the other paintings around are sort of, you know, remixes of the surface of water in kind of pixel squares or, you know, kind of glitched out or low resolution, almost like paint by numbers, right? Solid colors abutting each other in strange shapes. So you have this assemblage. If we walk down the wall to the next one, really it's one big painting surrounded by dozens of little shells with tiny white buildings on, sort of handmade, and then lots of foliage, moss, twigs stuck into the wall, also on a string grid against the white wall. And some of the little panels that explain what links are, you know, the measuring chains for surveyors. But the central image is the rushing stream going over fallen logs and sort of green mossy rocks. And then it's coming up to this sort of wooden frame with chain link fence that seems to be kind of torn away. Big rocks and a tiny little waterfall as it goes over a wooden kind of edge. So where is this and what is this sort of man-made part of the stream?
This is right at the border, the boundary line between the Bird Alliance and Lower McClate Trail, but meaning Forest Park property. So it's got a property line, and I painted a big black line across this. I think it's a pretty powerful, dynamic, full of information painting that kind of has you looking back into the one property and you're standing in the next property. I have this wall arranged kind of with a really wild side on the right and going to more tame on the left, meaning tame without foliage and without chaos, the chaos of nature. This whole thing functions on so many different levels for me, but I could speak for myself. I love order. Who doesn't love order? And ecology and nature is overwhelmingly complex. And the people that came, the white people, I am a white lady who came to Oregon, people who domesticated this area for our in our country, moved the Native Americans off this property, pretty much erased their existence locally. I am curious to learn more, and this piece, I think, hopefully communicates some of the dynamics of, they use a Gunter chain. It was developed in England, but it's how the West was measured, and it's a really clever mathematical system where the chain is 66 feet long, and it has little charms at certain increments, and they literally stretched, two people stretched this chain and measured all of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, edge to edge, point A to point B, using this Gunter chain. I think it's 10 chains equal, or a mile. And then in 1850 to 1855, there was the Donation Land Act, where people could come if you were a white man, or if you were mixed race native, those would be the sons of the French trappers, men, you could come and you could be handed a square mile of property. And the property that this creek is on was handed to a man named Danford Balch. Part of the creek was on his property, but legally to this day, the creek retains his name, despite the fact that he was quite a ne'er-do-well and had very shallow ties to the property.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is artist Nancy Helmsworth. Nancy is talking about Riparian Reflections, a show with Lisa Conway and Julie Johnson, and Nancy's work, which is on our gallery 1114 through September 27th. Just a quick word about the two other artists who are not here, but you can just maybe say a little about their work. The show is called Riparian Reflections. It's all about rivers and streams, in particular Balch Creek or Kulla Creek. Lisa is a ceramicist, and she has done ceramic shapes. Some of them are containers based on water shapes. And then Julie has used kind of wood and twigs and vines, dried them and woven them into sculptural shape. Did you talk to Lisa about her ceramic work and how it connects to yours?
Yes, when I invited Lisa and Julie to join me in this exhibit, I asked them, we collaborated to come up with a name, a name that would describe all of our work together. So Lisa is very ceramicist. I know she's a professor at Clark College in Washington. She's sculptural. Some people, ceramicists do other things. She makes full contained forms, and they often remind me, I've shown with her before, of almost like the mushroom, the rich shapes that would be in the undergrowth, under the leaves, under the foliage that, as it decays. She is focusing on water right now. She's very much connected to trying to capture sensual feelings. She's very much interested in flow. Talks about how water can be both soothing and calming and strong and persistent at the same time, and that I think is what she's trying to communicate with her work.
So she has these light turquoise shapes. Some of them look like, you know, a water droplet when it hits and spreads out like petals. There are other shapes that are more like knot. Imagine a sausage tied in a knot in a kind of endless loop, and other rounded shapes that stand up. So they're all very smooth, shiny, natural colors to them, blue and brown. And in contrast with that is a very sharp, dry material that Julie uses. And she makes these kind of woven nests and balls and that kind of shape.
Well, Julie's a super interesting woman. She said she's got a forestry background, and she clearly has got a strong link to biology and ecology, a scientific view. And all her work in this show, Riparian, has been, well, not quite all of it, but it's all naturally harvested. She, part of her whole process is going out and getting the materials in nature. I know there are some pieces here that are apple shoots from apple trees, so that would be orchard, of course. But she also, once she joined the show, she made a point of going to riparian areas and harvested with permission and sustainability. I think they're wild willows and other plant material right from the stream. Also, she has some ivy here, and ivy, we have a little ivy featured over here because ivy is Forest Park's nemesis. Ivy is very invasive, and she and Julie has understanding of the scientific part of how the invasive, when we change the stream bed and we have invasive plants, how one thing leads to another, not in a positive way. So I look forward to hearing her speak on, but she'll be back in the gallery on the 27th from 3:30 to 5.
So Nancy, your other wall, you have the whole wall and you've made it into a kind of a diagonal downhill flow from, you know, high up in the creek, past Witches as kids know it, and then Witches Castle, and then down the creek to where, you know, the park entrance is. And you've done the same thing of painting the surface of the water, how it's affected by flow, the ripples, and then the rocks with the shadows, and then these sort of twigs or whatever has fallen in, like, into the water. So some, you know, seem to be looking straight down in these pictures. How did you assemble these? Were you trying to show a narrative at all?
Yeah, I am trying to show a narrative a bit going downhill, but the other part is I call this wall my sketchbook because I'm looking at the creek, I'm still captivated by the creek, but I'm also experimenting in how I want to present it. So a couple of these paintings, the two flanking the middle one, the two big ones flanking the middle one, I thought, well, what happens when I paint them starting out black and white or monochromatic black and white, and then come and add the color later? A little bit of, you know, a person is thinking about it. Six things when they're doing a project. So one of the things I was thinking about is how when the people came to the Northwest, and this is a little later than the surveying lines, but there's a lot of old postcards that are photographic postcards that are people out way out here sending a photo of a historic event, like a fire or a local event, to their family back east, and how just going down that path of like how we had black and white and then we had hand colored. So it's kind of shocking because in terms of value, lights and darks, these areas are super slow, a really narrow range. The color really activates them, but there isn't a really high light and a dark.
You were sort of imagining like sepia photos. The same thing, you divide all your paintings into grids and treat them in different ways. You know, you've cranked up the green in one corner, brown in another, and then in other panels you've painted what looked like contour maps, but really I think you're representing the water as a photo, but using line. And then there are these birds, the flickers at either end. So at this point, tell us about Balch. He's the bad guy in the story. And he was a bad guy, killed someone.
Yeah, he did. He did kill someone. Danford Balch came to Oregon, and he was a recipient of a big plot of land. He had a donation land claim, and his property was huge and important to Northwest. It was right here. His daughter, Anna wanted to marry one of the workers that he had hired to help on his property. Her stepfather didn't approve. He was clearly super controlling, and he went downtown with a loaded double-barreled shotgun, and when they got off the ferry, he shot his new son-in-law directly in the face and killed him on the spot. Then he was tried, convicted of premeditated murder, which the sentence is hanging, and he was the first white man to be hanged in the state of Oregon. That had only been a state, I think, a few months then.
Somehow the creek ended up in his name, named after him, but you want to change it to Kulla, which is a native word for bird. Not any particular bird?
No, it's a general word for bird, and it was suggested by the historic preservation officer at the Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde.
So who do you have to talk to get the name changed?
Well, I've done a lot of outreach in the public, and I'm really glad for this opportunity to reach, do more continued outreach. I've also worked with the Oregon Geographic Names Board, who are the the recommending body in the state. There's some neighbors in Willamette Heights that have a personal connection to the creek and have strong feelings about that. And there's also there's some people that they worry about history being erased, and I understand that point. But I also one thing that I'm a former educator, and one thing I know for a fact is that there is wonderful curriculum just written and unrolled out in 2020. All the Confederated tribes in the state were given a budget to write their own story. This is super important. They're writing their own story of their own history in K-12 curriculum. And I feel like Native American presence in our city, the information is really underreported and understood.
So you took your proposal to change it from Balch Creek to Kula Kula Creek to the Oregon Geographic Names Board. They had a vote and voted no.
Yes, the vote was 13-9, so it was a pretty close vote. And it was a unique proposal in that it was a name renaming from one of the white men, one of the privileged people, meaning privileged in society to obtain land. And they don't usually change people's names. Well, I was kind of confused by that. The people sitting in front of me, number one, they said, well, it should stay Balch because it was named after the family. That is factually not correct. I've asked the experts and written, and there's a person who wrote the Bible of all Oregon names, and essentially it was named in reference because Balch name was on the map. It was a referring name, a descriptive name, not an honoring name. So that's not true. Some people said, well, justice was done. I think justice is in the eyes of the beholder, meaning, you know, that's a personal interpretation. But also a bunch of people in front of me, meaning I only saw the backs of their head at the meeting, said it's a slippery slope. We don't want to change. We're not sure we want to start rechanging names. Well, I am very concerned with that rationale that's been used to be a barrier to a whole lot of needed change in our country and in the world. If you only had white men being at the table, being allowed to receive the public land, and you have a circle in modern times, meaning in modern times, it's 175 years ago, in modern times, you want to preserve that white man's name. What do you call a closed circle like that, where only a small group was privileged to receive property, and you want to maintain that name on that property? That is a structural problem that is quite concerning. Might be racism, might be sexism. I know those are harsh words.
Just to go back to your technique, so you'll go hiking, you take your phone out, just hold it in your hand, you don't have any kind of a gimbal or anything, take multiple photos and then take them home, look at them on screen, and then paint from the screen?
Yeah, something like that. I don't spend a lot of time composing. It's pretty much on the fly. I notice what I notice. I go, oh man, I keep looking at this spot. This must be important. I compose it pretty quickly on my phone and then use that as my starting reference.
And then in the studio, you're looking at a printout or at a monitor?
Oh, I'll look at a monitor because I need a little bigger than my phone. But when I'm looking at my monitor, I'm looking at an image that's maybe 3 by 3 inches, 4 by 4 inches, and I'll be making a painting that's 36 by 36 inches.
What was that you said about having to relook at things because the photo doesn't tell you everything?
Well, lots of times I'll take multiple photos at a spot, or I'll make a mental note. I don't really understand what's happening over here. It really is more having to do with this big painting over here. This is a very complicated painting, and I had to go up and look at that spot.
The one of the culverts and the chain link fencing.
Well, the one over there at the border between the Bird Alliance and the park is a very complicated painting, and I had to go check it out really about three or four other times. One thing I want to say is I did some little pixel extrapolations in the gridding. The other thing is not only does the grid look to the past, but the grid looks to the future. Think of how we see images through digital images now, that essentially it's all little pixels together. And that's one of the reasons I want to experiment with some needlepoint. Needlepoint's really traditional and traditionally women's work, but also it's essentially pixeled like we see pixelated computer images to this day.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was painter Nancy Helmsworth. Nancy was talking about the show Riparian Reflections, which includes her work and the work of Lisa Conway and Julie Johnson. It's on now at Gallery 114 through September 27th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus for the first time, Nancy.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 9 de septiembre del 2025. La Corte Suprema de